Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I'm Zach.
And we are back. It's Thursday. We got quite a bit to talk about on today's episode, which is kind of surprising for a minute that honestly doesn't have a lot going on with it.
No.
It's got a little bit.
Not a lot of dialogue, but we got a lot to talk about behind the scenes stuff.
Yes.
This week.
Yes. A lot of a new source, the extras from the Blu-ray.
Right. I believe last movie you mentioned the extras a fair amount.
Yeah.
This is one that is like expressly targeted on this minute. Which is really, really interesting.
Not solely this minute, but there is a good chunk of one of the extras for this minute. Yeah. And I think we should just shut up and get into it at this point.
Let's do that.
Okay. So
we are, of course, talking about minute 33 through 34.
We are. And we left off with the Reddit mod ass, actually. And the death stare from Chani. And Paul realizes he fucked up and says, never mind, please keep going. Paul learns his place. He shuts up. He learns how to properly sandwalk. And we see Paul and Chani begin to sandwalk together off across the small erg that Paul has been directed to cross.
And they are walking in uniform patterns together through the desert.
Remember, this is...
They're playing jazz. They're playing synchronous jazz.
This is a 16 over 28 on top of a 7 over 4.
Yeah. Whatever. Anyways, I'll let that gripe die here.
Yeah.
So we get some...
Because we have new music to talk about.
We do.
We get our first taste of A Time of Quiet Between the Storms.
Yes.
Which is the name of the track from the soundtrack. Once again, just to remind everyone, soundtrack done by Hans Zimmer and his team. And this is, to say this is the like defining piece of music for this movie, I think is the most appropriate way of talking about it.
I would say one of them, one of the best.
There's it is a few... the most memorable, for sure.
Yes, absolutely. It's wonderful. It really, really is great. We did not get a chance to go to the Hans Zimmer live experience.
We didn't, but previous guest on the show, our friend Charlie, did.
Yes, and I was extremely jealous.
Yep.
The videos that I saw of from her and from other sources of that that touring concert, just superb. But this was one of the songs that they played and centered around.
Mm-hmm. Fucking beautiful song.
Yep.
The extras really dive into a lot of the creative work behind this song and some of the other songs.
And this is the behind the scenes extras. Yeah. The extra actors.
The behind the scenes extras, that is. And as musicians do, Hans Zimmer, you know, and his team collaborated with other artists to help make the music for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
One of those collaborations was a longtime collaborator of his, Tina Guo.
Oh, yes.
She is a incredibly talented cellist, and her work is front and center here. We get to see in the movie extra a little bit of the conversation that Hans is having with her about how to, you know, attack certain notes or lay off certain notes. I think Hans specifically says, I need more of a story told.
Yeah.
Or tell me a story or something to that extent.
Which is, I love when musicians get to that level where that's the kind of direction that you give to them instead of make this a mezzo forte or a, you know, piano or whatever, like that kind of stuff. That's very clinical kind of direction. When you start getting into the artistry of music, it is just
the soul of it.
Yeah, it's so, so great.
From Denis, from the same section, I wanted Hans to write something unforgettable for Chani. And I love the way that he says Chani.
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 Chani. A love theme, the love of Paul for Chani. I wanted something that would be heartbreaking and the most beautiful love theme ever written, and honestly, I think he did it. And then Hans says, for me, the romance was atypical, but it always was going to be at the heart of the story for this movie. Chani shows him how to love this barren planet. I originally wrote the theme for her and then let it spread and bleed across into Paul and then bleed across into the planet itself. Now, I know what I'm about to say is not breaking any new ground or coming up with any original takes here, but I just want to say fuck the Academy for not including the music for Dune Part 2 yeah. as a participant in yeah. for consideration for music, and their stupid ass rule of how it can't use more than 20% of previously used music for a prequel. First of all, it's not a prequel. It's, and you know, this is from a billboard.com interview that was done with Hans Zimmer where he's like, it's not a prequel, it's part two. It's the same overarching story.
Yeah. Not a sequel.
Or yeah, it's not a sequel. It's part two of the same story.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about it, it's like, all right, well, like, how much of Star Wars music was ever reused?
All of
surely
it.
More than 20%.
Almost
I didn't,
all of it.
I didn't look and see if the music was ever up for consideration.
Yeah. But I mean, like, well, John Williams, he used the themes heavily.
Yeah.
He stuck with a couple of
John
themes.
Williams loves a leitmotif. Oh,
of course. I would say Hans Zimmer does it too. And I'll talk more about that here in a second, but yeah, I think that it was bullshit that they weren't considered for, you know, at least Academy Award consideration. Now, they won a fuck ton of other awards.
They did. And the music won a fuck ton of other awards across other award ceremonies and shows and, you know,
governing bodies.
Yeah. Pretty sure it won a Golden Globe. I was about to say Emmy, but Emmys are TV. I know that because your brother has some Emmys.
That's true. Not to brag, but I am Emmy adjacent. Emmy award winning adjacent.
Emmy award winning adjacent. Yeah, no, it's won Golden Globes. I went to IMDb and I just like control F Hans Zimmer, and there's like on the award page for Dune Part 2, there's like 20 something music awards that it's won.
It's either been nominated or won a ton.
No, no, these awards. Were the wins.
Okay. Well, yeah. Yeah. I'm saying, okay, well you put in nominations in there and it's even more. So it's just that one, you know, it didn't win an Oscar, which is whatever. I mean, they won Oscars for
An Oscar for Dune Part 1, but also like, fuck off.
But even the sound team, even like the sound and music team, they won Oscars this year, 2025 for other, parts of Dune 2. So it's not like they were shafted. It's just like they weren't, like the soundtrack was not eligible, which sucks.
Which is bullshit.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about the song a little bit. Yes. A little bit more, I would say.
Yeah.
So, as you said earlier, the title is A Quiet Time Between Storms, Between the Storms. The prominent instrument that we hear first is a very familiar instrument. If you've ever seen anything vaguely Middle Eastern in film, it is a duduk. Now, you know this instrument, correct? You at least know how it sounds.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful, wonderful sounding instrument, similar to like a pipe. It's a reeded instrument, I believe, and played similar to like an Irish whistle or
a penny whistle.
A penny whistle, similar to that or any other kind of like reeded.
Certainly not as harsh as a penny whistle. No, though. No.
Same kind of idea as a clarinet, but without like valves and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It looks incredibly hard to play. I've tried to play a penny whistle before, and I don't have that side of musicality. They're incredibly hard to me.
For people that aren't in the know, you grew up a percussionist.
Yes.
I started playing drums and then switched to, continued to play drums, but then also developed a knack for brass and woodwind and stuff like that.
Yeah. So, the person who's playing this is particularly amazing.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Venezuelan flautist named Pedro Eustache.
Yep.
And he is fucking amazing.
Dude, he's incredible. And for people that are, generally speaking, like gamers or people that watch the Game Awards, he's known as the flute guy.
Oh,
he's,
is he?
He's very prominently, like, always displayed whenever the orchestra is playing. And they, like, kind of have a separate side stage for him just because, like, people online are always like, it's the fucking flute guy.
Well, he's got, like, not only is he a fucking an amazing player, but he's got a goddamn wonderful stage presence.
Mm-hmm.
His hair is awesome. Now, as a bald man, I am incredibly jealous about this man's hair. A
little bit of hair envy?
Oh, for sure. He looks like a more put together version of Claudio from Coheed and Cambria.
I wouldn't say Claudio doesn't look put together.
No, okay, maybe it's less wild and crazy hair, but still the same kind
of. Still the same, like, super tight curls. It's just that Pedro's goes up and Claudio's is very large and goes out.
I feel like if their hair was the same length, they would look the same.
Probably.
Yeah. Really cool. But yeah, he's just fucking great. Now, this guy, he won me over with just how incredible of a musician he is.
Yeah.
But it sealed the deal when he started talking about how he made one of the instruments just out of PVC pipe from Home Depot.
It's
fucking great. One of the people in the extra said that, yeah, he just finds some pipes, attaches a reed to it, and has the most amazing instrument you've ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
It's so cool.
I think that just goes to show that conventional instruments aren't the only thing that you have to rely on.
No, it's absolutely not. I mean,
and part of this
Blue Man Group has proved that for years.
Sure. And then part of this extra goes into, and unfortunately doesn't define like what these other artists contributed to in certain songs, but like Hans talks about these Canadian artists that he works with that like have been spending the last 10 years building these special keyboards that, you know, when you think of a piano and you go down and you push down the key, it just gives a single tone.
Plonk.
Like, yeah, obviously you can press it lighter or harder for, you know, greater or less attack.
Mm-hmm.
But what these guys developed were keys that can also sense vibrato in a side-to-side motion and everything.
Yeah.
But then they also have these keyboards hooked up to these like various shaped wooden boxes. Like one of them was a pyramid shape. One of them was like a weird like twisting, shifting side-to-side kind of, almost like a weird like 50s Art Deco piece.
Yeah. And one of them looked like it had like a gong in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Just like I think they described them as like resonance chambers.
I just love weird music instrumentation, like experimenting with that kind of stuff.
Now those keyboards that they were using where it is touch sensitive, and I've seen these keyboards used elsewhere.
Yeah.
Outside of this behind the thing. So I don't know if they developed the actual MIDI keyboards themselves.
So you and I used to work at an Apple store.
Correct.
I don't think that's necessarily doxing anything or whatever. Do you remember we used to sell a keyboard that kind of did that?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they've been, it's,
the technology's been there.
I don't think they developed the MIDI controllers that they're using because they had brand names on them and everything.
Sure.
But they definitely developed the extra bits that those MIDI controllers controlled and like all
the resonance chambers,
the resonance chambers and like all the sounds and everything that went into it. So I've seen these used before, and funny enough, or cool enough, I guess I should say, I've seen one of these that was big enough to mimic a marimba. So you played it with mallets.
Yeah.
And if you held down the mallets and moved them up or down the keys, it gave you that same, like, you could increase the
volume swells and stuff.
Yeah, volume swells on there. So I guess it's more like a vibraphone than a marimba. But the same idea. They're fucking cool.
Yeah.
If I had the money and the free time, you bet your ass I would have one of these things to fuck around with. They're so incredibly cool. It just made the song and like the composition of this music. And I'm sure they used him elsewhere in the movie as well.
Oh yeah.
But it's just so, so cool. I love people who are inventive like that.
Give artists a little bit of money and some time to develop cool shit, and they're going to always develop just the coolest shit that you've never seen before. So, yep.
Now this song, Quiet Time Between the Storms, it really reminded me of, I can see how some people would take this as like a derogatory phrase. I don't mean it that way. I love it. But the inification of music that happened around the year 2000.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like with like big cinematic scores, there was always some kind of some music that if you had to bet, you were, the odds were in your favor that Enya wrote some of the music or performed on it. Most notably, the Gladiator movie.
Yep.
And even more specific, the song Now We Are Free, which is the song at the very end when...
pretty sure that was also Hans Zimmer.
That's... Shut up. Shut the fuck up. It's the song at the very end where Gladius Marcus... Maximus Spartacus...
Nope.
I don't know. He's got 15 names. I can't remember all of them.
It's just Maximus. But
it's a song at the very end where Maximus is walking through the field and he's seeing his wife and son in the field, and it's the big swell. It's the very end of the movie.
Well, yeah, because he's dead.
He's dead. Yep. But it's that song, and I had to look it up. I was like, this reminds me of this fucking song. And lo and behold, it was also Hans Zimmer who wrote that song too. So your boy loves a theme, yeah. I guess.
Yep.
But they're great. This, again, not a derogatory thing at all. They're wonderful pieces of music. So yeah.
There's something special about this one. Almost that, like, and you know, I think Denis put it best when he's like, I wanted it to be heartbreaking. Like the song is a love song, but like it definitely has like sad tones to it as well.
Sure.
We love it. Look. Sad boy hours, for real. We love it.
So while this song is playing, let's continue with the minute.
Yeah.
So we've gushed a whole lot.
Back to the minute. We're done with our glazing. For now. I'm sure we'll find something else.
Yeah. So while the song is playing in the background, it dips below, and Chani is sitting, we see Chal.
Yeah, we're back to Chal.
We are firmly in Chal territory.
And we are, at the very least, that next morning, in reality, probably a couple days later.
You think?
He had to cross the whole Erg. Probably not going to do the whole thing in one night.
Fair. We don't really get any kind of sense of that, but that's a fair assessment.
Yeah. We don't get a definitive, the next morning. Title.
Meanwhile.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So we see Chal sitting next to some wind traps.
Yep.
And I think it's the first time that we've seen wind traps in film, in the movie, or in the Denis Villeneuve movies.
In the Denis Villeneuve movies, correct. And I have some fun facts about these wind traps.
Lay them on me.
All right. Looking at these wind traps, Zach, not a whole lot going on with them. If you had to guess, how much do you think these wind traps weigh a piece?
2 pounds.
You would be horribly wrong. They are half a ton a piece.
Oh. Wow.
Yep. They were so...
There's our Christopher Walken for the week.
Wow.
Wow.
They are so heavy and cumbersome, in fact, that they had to use army helicopters to place these 3 wind traps in place on top of these rocks.
Well, okay. Were you asking me about in-universe or... In filming?
Column A, column B.
Okay. Well, I was answering an in-universe.
In-universe, they're very lightweight because they're, you know, yeah, mostly just tubes. But
it's a system of tubes, John. it's like the internet. It's just a system of tubes. It's all computer.
These wind traps had to be placed by army helicopter on top of what the production team called Bird Rock. There's no specific place in, I would assume Jordan is where they were, where they were doing the filming. Art and Soul doesn't specify, but given that all of these like rockier outcroppings were all shot in Jordan, I'm going to head and go on an assumption here. Now,
why so heavy?
They don't say.
Because they don't look that heavy.
No, they're tubes. And like, honestly, they look like PVC pipes, some tubing, and like some scrap aluminum.
Yeah, why the fuck was that? Unless there was a bunch. Okay, this could be it. There was some plating underneath the sand so that it wouldn't like sink. And,
well, they're not in the sand, though. They're on top of a rock.
But we see sand around them.
Well, there's just sand in the air.
But I mean, on the ground, we see sand, don't we? No? Okay. Nope. What the hell? Why? Yeah, that's crazy to me.
I don't know. But yeah, that's
two tons.
Yep. That is Art and Soul's contribution to this scene.
Okay.
Now, I have something that I want to talk about. And that is my love for technology in this universe being rooted in reality.
Yeah.
Because this is definitely something that can be done,
mm-hmm.
is being done. And, you know, this is just as we would expect it to be done in this universe here within the confines of real science.
Yeah. So how does a wind trap work?
Captures... just resonant, not resonant, captures residual humidity in the air,
mm-hmm.
condenses that into liquid water, and then there's the tubes, and it all feeds into a reservoir, presumably in the bottom because yeah. gravity, and then you just capture the water from there.
Yeah. It operates on the principles of condensation.
Yep.
Like that is it. So what moisture is available on Arrakis is almost immediately evaporated into the air. And these wind traps capture that air. And as it cools, it condenses down into water. And that collects in basins. I mean,
not unlike the ears of Muad'Dib that we saw in part one.
Absolutely.
Collects the moisture. Muad'Dib yep. makes his own water.
Yep.
Captures the moisture in his ears and then it follows ducts along the ear into, mm-hmm. you know, the tear duct. And then he just like
bathes or drinks it or uses it. However,
exactly.
So the Fremen are clearly taking cues from nature, which makes perfect sense. And it is a wonderful piece of technology. That's pretty neat. So while Chani is sitting down, explaining these wind traps to Paul, I got a little error I want to point out, and I confirmed with you before I wrote this in my notes,
and we confirmed across multiple different copies of the movie, both yeah. the Blu-ray, HBO, and Apple TV version. So this isn't like a weird, you know, skip on a Blu-ray player kind of thing.
Yeah. So between the word, so Chani says, she says, you know, I'm the only one who believes you're going to make it till summer.
Most people think you won't last 2 weeks.
Yeah, most people think you won't last 2 weeks. So after this, her next line is, if you want to follow us into the desert. Now, here's where my issue comes in, or just a small little blip.
I'd say it's an issue. It's more of just like a goof.
Yeah.
Or a editing. Yeah. Something weird happened either with, you know, just the voice lines that were captured on set, or maybe it's a combination of voice lines on set and ADR or whatever. Yeah.
Between the words wanna and follow, you can hear that those words run together in a way that a natural voice wouldn't.
It was almost like a wanna follow.
Yeah, well, kind of. Not even though, because when you just said that, if I were to look at the waveforms on the audio editor that I use, it would clearly show wanna and follow.
Yeah.
As two distinct words.
It was like a wanna follow.
It's wanna, and then it immediately goes to the beginning of a word, follow.
Yeah.
So there's a difference between how you start a word and how you run on to a second word. This is wanna and follow as two separate starts of words. if that makes any sense at all. Like if I say wanna follow, that sounds a certain way. But if I say wanna follow, it sounds very different. Like, and yeah, if you take that space out between those two words, that's what it sounds like happened here. So it's disjointed. It sounds like a cut in the audio.
I think it was probably an ADR thing and then might have just been missed. Or
maybe it's, again, super, super small thing. Whatever. I'm only noticing.
Something you wouldn't, very likely would not notice watching this movie normally.
No, absolutely not. I only notice you're a
psychopath hitting back on your fucking keyboard to buffer back five seconds.
Every second, yeah. So I had to call it out, though, because that's what we do here on the Doom Minute podcast is we call out everything that we notice in this movie.
You know what Paul isn't noticing, though?
What Johnny's explaining to him?
Yeah, because this motherfucker is so just smitten and lost in the sauce that he's just like doing that thing that all of us have done where we see, you know, a person we're attracted to and we're just like fucking mindlessly staring at them.
he's
absorbing
just
any of the information that's being given to us in that moment.
He's got the biggest doe eyes and he's just goofy face infatuation right here.
And she's trying to just explain to this kid how to get water from the air. And at one point she's just like, what?
And that's where the minute ends.
Yeah.
Is right on that. What? So yeah, he's, I mean, God bless him. He's doing his best to pay attention, but hey, you know what? Love is love, I guess.
Guess we'll have to find out later.
We will find out what happens after this tomorrow for sure. So thanks for joining us through this musical minute, I'd say.
Yeah, it's a very musical minute.
I think we talked probably more about the music than we did the movie.
We absolutely talked more about the music than the movie and the people behind the music.
Yep. Again, if you haven't seen the behind the scenes extras on this particular song, highly implore you to do so. It's really, really good.
It's on every copy of the DVD or Blu-ray. If you buy the movie on Apple TV, I believe it's there. I don't think any of the extras are there on HBO's streaming, which I think is interesting because it's, you know, a Warner movie, but they got to sell DVDs and Blu-rays somehow.
HBO sucks.
Their streaming quality is ass. Anyways.
Max, more like minimum.
All right. Well, with that, I'm putting an end to this podcast episode. You can find us online on Blue Sky. We are at DuneMinute.com. You can email DuneMinute@gmail.com. I'm going to go beat up Zach after that bullshit, and we'll see you tomorrow.
See ya.